You're listening to a Leisure Moment podcast with your host, Deetra Helvey, who's always ready to have a casual conversation about her love for literature.
My casual conversation with Nora Baskin took me back to childhood memories. Childhood experiences, or maybe life experiences in general. You know, the ones that tug at us, begging us to write them down, begging to capture those memories on paper. For Nora, it was her way of being heard. It was her way to make sense of her childhood. Podcast episode 10 with Nora Baskin. Enjoy. Hello, Nora. This is Deetra with a Leisure Moment.
Oh, hi. Deetra, is that how you pronounce it?
That's correct. It's Deetra. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
Absolutely. Yes, I can.
Okay. Oh, you have such a southern accent. I guess yes. I have a New York accent.
I guess. We are here right now in the upper part of South Carolina enjoying our spring break.
Well, it's spring here, too. We had a terrible winter, but it's finally here, so we're good. We're all good.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, thank you so much for joining us today for a casual conversation about your upcoming book, Subway Love. I'm so excited and ready to talk to you about Subway Love, but I want to kind of start off by getting to know you first a little bit.
Okay.
Well, just doing a little research, and I think you and I have something in common. You used to be a writing teacher.
Well, I still teach writing.
Okay.
I'm not a certified teacher, but once I was published, I took what I learned over the years of trying to be published and put together a curriculum. I mostly teach children, but I've recently started teaching adults as well.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful.
Do you teach writing?
Well, my last year in the classroom, I taught approximately 140 middle schoolers writing.
Oh nice. Yeah, nice. Yes. It's a good age. That's the perfect age.
Very, very good age. And when I was looking at your website and looking at your kind of introduction, where you started describing yourself as a writer and how you somewhat write about the things you remember, that's something that I would talk to my children about, especially when they would say, oh, Miss Helvey, I can't write about anything. I'm having writer's block. I can't write. Well, write about what you know. And I just found that opening piece on your website very powerful, very, very touching, because it really does lend well to the world of a writer.
Yeah, I mean, for a long time, I worried I was, sort of cheating. I pretty much write everything I've experienced. I fictionalize everything and make it contemporary, but I use a lot of what I experienced.
Yeah, you said, I've experienced or seen or done and give them to my characters. How powerful is that? How powerful is that?
Well, to me it is. Hopefully it translates, and hopefully other people can relate, and
Absolutely. I found it very, and I'm going to have to say, this is for me, you are a new author for me. And so many times when we're in the classroom, I don't want to really say that we're bound to curriculum or bound to certain novel studies, but unfortunately sometimes we are.
Right.
And so I noticed that a lot of the books that you have already written are ones that I've not heard of.
Right.
And when I look at the subject matter, they were definitely ones that I would have loved to have used when I was in the classroom. So I'm really excited about helping get the word out, especially to our teacher listeners about your books.
Thank you.
The subject matters, the storylines, and your characters.
Oh, great.
Let's talk a little bit about Subway Love before we go a little further.
Okay.
What inspiration for this subject line, or you can get us started any way you would like to.
Well, starting from where you were just speaking, I thought I was writing a story that wasn't about me. I thought I was writing a pure romantic time travel story. And I'm not exactly sure where the idea came from. I think I was talking to some kids after a school visit, and you know, we were batting around ideas, and someone said, oh, wouldn't it be neat if two people met, you know, only when they sat on a bench, something like that. So, and it sort of just morphed into a subway. But when I started writing each character's backstory, I just once again, you know, started to use my own experience. And so each character has a bit of my own memory and my own history. Mm-hmm. So, of course, I never time traveled on a New York subway, but once again, those same issues came up and the same themes. So I wound up using, I mean, the truth is, if you studied all my books, if you put it together, you would see how autobiographical everything is. And of course, people in my family and my friends recognize, recognize everything. But, that story, I really wanted to try to write a romance. I hadn't done that.
Well, one thing that I have Subway Love right here in my hands. I like to talk to the author first before I really start reading the book. When I do podcasts a lot of times, and just looking at the book brings me to just maybe, I guess, about a week or so ago, I went to New York for the first time.
With my
daughter, her middle school orchestra. We were there for 4 days. And one of the activities that we were going to do, because yes, we're in South Carolina and no subways here, was to ride the subway.
Right.
And so what a very unique experience it was, just kind of people watching on the subway.
Right.
And just as I'm sitting here and listening to you talk about Subway Love and looking at the cover of your book, and how one young lady's looking at us and the young man seems to be looking at her, just kind of brings back those memories of when we were sitting and people watching and wondering what could their story be.
So yeah, well, just you're reminding me, once again, when I teach writing, and I often teach a course on how to use your own life and translate it into fiction, you know, there's do's and don'ts, red flags, you know, for taking your own memories and making them into a novel. And one of them is not to set your novel in the night, like, I don't know, I'm 53, so I grew up in the 1960s and 70s, and I teach potential writers, you know, don't set your book in your time period just because that's when you grew up and think it's nostalgic, unless it's very specific to the story. You know, there's something historic that needs to be told. Otherwise, there's no reason not to contemporize it. And yet in this book, I was able to get away with that. I broke my own rule because it's a time travel book. So the New York City subway that she's riding is 1973, which would have been when I was riding the subways. I was born in Brooklyn, but I moved when I was young, but I was able to break my own rule and show New York City in the 1970s. So the subway you saw when you visited last week was nothing like the subway I saw as a kid growing up, or my character Laura lives when she rides the subway. It's really been changed. When I was a kid, it was dangerous, and New York was not what it is today. Most specifically, the subways were covered with graffiti, just covered. They were top to bottom, inside and out.
Right.
And you probably didn't see that at all.
I did not. No graffiti at all.
No, I know. So I really wanted to also talk about the history of New York and the history of graffiti, which is a hip-hop underground art form. Now, it got eradicated. You know, it's gone. but it's sort of been, it's morphed into hip hop music and rap music, which is very similar in a lot of ways. So I also wanted to touch on that art form that was underground and, you know, rebellious and spoke to that time period and still has relevance today. So you probably missed that when you rode the subway because it's all cleaned up.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure, yes, we did. And actually it was, I mean, it was very clean and it was it was nothing like what you see on the movies and things of that nature.
But that was real. It really, I mean, we used to be afraid to sort of go into Central Park. And now it's, I mean, it really has changed.
But
there were some parts of that were actually really artistic. I mean, I actually admire very much graffiti art. There's some amazing artists. So I wanted to show that. That comes up in the book. There actually is a graffiti artist who can be in both time periods, and he's sort of the conduit for their magical connection.
So tell me a little bit about your two main characters in the book. And I know you do not want to give away any major storylines or major events, but let's just talk very briefly about the two characters and the development of the two characters.
Yeah, sure. You know, I don't write real plot-heavy books, so there, I don't think I'd be giving anything away. It's more about the literature of the book, the themes that it touches on. So Laura lives in 1972 to 73. That's the book sort of spans the winter. And she lives in a hippie lifestyle. Her mom has embraced that lifestyle and she lives with her boyfriend. And that's very much a true memory of mine, because I grew up in that time period and actually grew up in Woodstock, New York. And I saw firsthand the enormous change in our country from the point of view of a kid, an 8, 9, 10, 11-year-old. So I wasn't a teenager. It wasn't like it was fun for me. It was in some ways scary. And so that's Laura's backstory. And Jonas lives in New York City in the contemporary times, 2013, and his parents are also divorced, and he's grappling with guilt over his why his parents got divorced, and they both seek each other out and complete each other's story, and yet they obviously can never be together. I mean, they can't. They live in two different time periods. So I also wanted to touch on the Jewish concept or myth of Beshert, of your soulmate, that everyone has a soulmate. And if they don't meet in this lifetime, according to the myth, they will meet again. So even though these two even though these two teenagers in love can't complete their love at this time, the myth would be that they will in another. That was a romantic notion.
And it is, and you hesitated and paused a bit when you talked about romance and lovers or then teenagers in love.
Yes.
You know, I tell you, I think that we've really seen a shift with young adult literature from the time that I know that I was in middle school and high school until now. And so what do you perceive as the turning point in that shift?
Yeah, but it's a kind of problematic because the way I see it, real teenagers, high school students, are reading adult novels. Mm-hmm. And it's really middle school kids that are reading these YA books, even if it says 14 and up. So I'm conscious of that. I feel like, yes, my books are YA, I write both. I also have strictly middle grade books, this is YA, which means it'll touch on older subject matter briefly. The language could be, there could be like bad words in it because teenagers talk like that.
Correct.
But
yes.
It's still being read, in my opinion, by 7th, 8th, 9th graders.
Yes.
Maybe mm-hmm. crossover, maybe adults, but I'm conscious of that, so I'm careful of what I put in the books, and they're somewhat innocent love stories. Whereas my middle grade books, I wouldn't touch on those things at all.
And
like there might be a kiss, you know, there might be.
Right.
But my YAs are, I know, it's funny because of these categories now. I don't think we used to have that. I mean, we didn't. It's pretty new.
Yes, I don't think so. And I would have to say that I completely agree with the breakdown that you mentioned regarding the
who's reading.
Books and who's reading. Because mm-hmm. our oldest son is 17, getting ready to graduate mm-hmm. from high school. And yes, you're right. In middle school, he was reading, I guess, what we would say middle level or young adult books.
Right.
He's a very avid reader and, you know, tried to really monitor what he was reading, but he would read so much and read so fast. So by the time he got to high school, he was reading a lot more complicated texts, more books that were, you know, they were in the school library, but in my eyes, I'm thinking, oh, that's an adult novel.
Yes, they are. They are. I mean, sure. High school kids are reading adult books. They should be, you know.
Yes.
But to call it, you know, YA, it is, and some of them are crossover. You know, you have, I think, some adults. And now there's a new category called new adult.
Yes, there is. And it's amazing. Have you read any new adult?
I don't know. I don't know what's been categorized as that. I think it's like, I read a book called Prep, which was an adult novel, did really well. I'm drawing a blank on her name, but it was a beautiful novel, and it was her 4 years of high school. But I think that would be considered new adult now, if it was published now, because it's the, you know, early 20s. Late teens, early 20s, that's what they're calling new adult. I don't know.
Yes, that's what they're calling new adult. And I will say, you know, I have several books in that genre as well that I like. It's kind of the after the student has graduated or is about to graduate from high school and go off into the world and discover themselves. Mm-hmm. So it's an entertaining genre as well. I want to kind of move to a piece or to a discussion where you mentioned on your website that your grandfather and your father mm-hmm. were both artists.
Yes.
And so I would say that you were immersed in the world of fine arts, writing, art, your mm-hmm. whole entire life.
My whole entire life, yeah.
So tell us how it was living among a father and grandfather, because I've looked at some of the pictures, just
yeah,
beautiful.
He was very well known. He was very successful and well known as an illustrator before the advent of photography, which is another thing I touch on in Subway Love, the change in photography. But you know, the biggest there were a few major ways that influenced my life, and one is when your father makes a living as an artist. He was a teacher. He was a college professor. His father made his living as an artist. But is that art is it's an option. I mean, it's not only an option, it's almost expected. Like, to grow up in a family like that, if you chose to be a musician or an artist, a writer, it would be the norm.
Right.
So it wasn't a stretch. I never even didn't consider it. It's almost a given, which means that I really admire people who grew up in families of bankers, lawyers, and they pursue a career in the arts. Mm-hmm. They're going against the grain and going against what's normal. They're really taking a leap. And I admire that so much because in my family, I mean, I have no other way to describe it. It just was almost expected that we would all pursue some form of art. That's what we grew up with. That was what was valued. It wasn't money. It wasn't, you know, a career that, a traditional career. It was valued in my house. So it was actually easier to make that choice.
The other thing
that's kind of funny is when I did graduate college and I tried to get a, you know, quote unquote regular job in New York City, I worked for, I started in September, October, and then November came Thanksgiving, and they said, well, you get Thursday off, you know, it's Thanksgiving. I was working in a business, you know, and I said, what do you mean Thursday off? Don't I have a week for Thanksgiving? And then because my father was a college professor, I grew up, with the school schedule. That's all I knew. And then I said, well, what about Christmas? Don't we get a month?
You know, no,
like, I guess I knew we didn't, but I was so shocked and I was shell shocked. And I never went back.
I never went back.
I quit before Thanksgiving and I never went back. So the idea, you know, this kind of academic life was also very ingrained in me. So I went right into teaching. I started teaching at a private school and then I taught nursery school and then I was finally published. The other way it influenced me, for what better or worse, I don't know.
Well, I'm going to say, I think that I'm not sure what I would do if I didn't have my spring break and my Christmas and my Thanksgiving as well. So I understand completely what you're saying.
It's just so civilized. it should be the only way. You know, saying this for any other reason, but that I have been a teacher and I did teach in the public school for a little while as an aide, and it's brutal and it's grueling. And if you didn't have your summers off, you wouldn't survive. I don't think people understand.
It's a lot of hard work.
It's a lot of hard work. Mm-hmm. It's very, very demanding in a way that people that aren't teachers don't understand.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, you know, I want to go back to a huge point that you made earlier when you talked about if, as a family, immersed in the arts, it wasn't really, it wasn't out of the norm for you to be immersed in the arts as well within your career. Now, tell me a little bit, if you would like to share. I think I saw that your son Sam is into hip-hop. Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit.
Yeah, it just trickled right down.
It sprinkled right onto your boys.
It did. My older son is a hip-hop artist, I guess you call him. He's uh-huh. pursuing that world. He writes songs all day long and records them and has a producer who's interested. So he's hoping for that to happen. He's performed. And my younger son is now in graduate school, the journalism school at Columbia University, where he's
wonderful.
Studying to be a journalist. And he's a writer.
That's awesome.
And he's been covering things at the Barclay Center and the high school students that are now just picking their basketball schools. And so they're both writers.
That's great. That's great. Mm-hmm. That's the area that my son would like to go into is journalism. So
sports journalism or journalism?
Sports journalism. He has mentioned sports journalism. Mm-hmm.
That's what my son's doing. Well, they say journalism is you know, really in trouble with all the print media going out, but sports journalism in particular is still very viable. It hasn't diminished at all. Look around.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I tell you, I've truly enjoyed our conversation about Subway Love. It is on my pile to read starting Monday, so we can get ready for the tour that is coming out, sponsored by Candlewick Press. I'm so excited about it. And I just thank you so much for spending some time with A Leisure Moment about your life and discussing your upcoming book. And I look forward to having the opportunity to read more of your books.
No, I love talking to you. You're so nice and so friendly. And thank you so much. I was nervous, you know, when I called, but now I'm not.
Well, I am so glad, and I hope you have a wonderful rest of the week. And thanks again so much, Nora, for your time.
Thank you. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey, if you enjoyed that episode, let us know on iTunes by giving us a great review. We want to thank all our listeners again. Check us out at aleisuremoment.com. Like us on Facebook and Twitter. Have a good one.